Hey folks, Weingard here, and this is an MCrit Wii. Before we start the Wii, the Smack dates have changed. The Smack dates have changed. The dates for Smack have changed. You should have seen notifications of this all over the social media world, but if you haven't, the dates have changed. New dates, June 23rd to 26th. Still in Chicago, still in the same place. Different dates, June 23rd to 26th. Make sure if you had reserved time for May that you switch it over to June. Okay, enough of that. Hopefully by now you've heard my intro arrest talk from Smack, either on the blog or you heard it in person on the Gold Coast. Numerous things to talk about. I wanted to get an incredibly skilled, evidence-based intensivist, Rob McSweeney, on the line to talk about some of the points from the lecture. Rob's an anesthetist and intensivist in Ireland. He puts out critical care reviews, which you'll hear more about tomorrow, so I'm not going to belabor today. I'm going to do an entire Wii on the good stuff that Rob does tomorrow. So for today, let's just say he's a phenomenal guy, a contributor to the foam world, and I wanted to hear his thoughts on the intro arrest talk. Let's get to the topic at hand. Now, I did my intro arrest talk at Smack. You were there, and I heard you were smacking your head at some points, and I think the two and possibly three topics that might have led to that head smacking are epinephrine for cardiac arrest, the VSE trial, and was ECMO one of them, Rob?
No. ECMO certainly wasn't one. I think ECMO was coming, and you're certainly a proponent of it and a leading light in this regard. I think as the technology matures and as experience increases, ECMO will become a standard of care in due course. The question around ECMO will be more who to institute it on rather than does it work. I think we realize it certainly works. I think it's coming. It is an advancement, not just for ECPR, but for gas exchange as well. I think mechanical ventilation will in the near future be a thing of the past. I think we'll just cannulate our patients rather than intubate our patients. And I think that's increasingly coming for more and more conditions, of which cardiac arrest is just one. So I'm delighted that it's happening. The figures from Japan are just incredible. They're out of hospital. ECPR figures are just incredible. So I think this is coming. It's just a shame where I am in Northern Ireland. We're a little bit behind the curve and we'll be probably 10 years behind the rest of you guys before we're doing it, but it is coming.
All right, so fair enough. So it sounds like the two topics of conversation are epi, and if epi, the addition of vasopressin and steroids to it. So why don't we get right to it? Epi for cardiac arrest, Rob, what do you think?
Yeah, I think so. At the moment, the evidence base is uncertain. I think of that, no one can disagree. The question is, while it's uncertain, do we use it or do we not use it? What we need is a big, proper, randomized control trial, and we just don't have that at the moment. The best we have is the single study from Western Australia, which was massively underpowered, which is really disappointing. But the signals were, while not completely in favor, they were towards adrenaline or epinephrine. So with a single randomized placebo-controlled study, with the signals being at that small stage towards adrenaline, I think it's kind of hard not to use it. But I certainly think there's equipoise for a randomized controlled trial on the matter.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Jacobs trial, because I think that's the crux of it. And the Jacobs trial was supposed to recruit 4,000 patients. And this is backstory, so I don't know if it's true, but this is what I've heard from all my friends in the resus community, is all of the EMS services that said they were going to participate backed out at the last minute, leaving him with only his own single center that he was affiliated with. And therefore, instead of the 4,000 patients, they only had 500 to analyze. But would it have been better for him to just put a publication out saying, we can't make any statistical analysis because this trial did not happen the way it was supposed to? Data for sure. What I'm saying is, what went into that abstract is there is no statistically significant difference between epinephrine, placebo, for hospital discharge. And that's the way they publish it. And when you hear Jacobs talk about it, he says there was no statistical difference between the drugs, so it was a negative trial. I think that was a travesty. I think the data should have been out there, and in the results section, it should say, due to recruitment issues, we can make no conclusions. Because to put a statistically insignificant difference out there makes people think this was a negative trial that was properly done, and all the doubters now say we should stop using epinephrine.
Well, I think that comes down to trial interpretation and critique. And anybody who looks at the study immediately sees it. It's the big message from the study is that it was underpowered, sees that it's massively underpowered. But at that point in time, the signal was arguably towards epinephrine. So if someone just reads the abstract, they miss that. But for this sort of level work, people shouldn't be just reading the abstract. It's a real take-home message to read the full study.
Okay. Well, let me ask you the second part of the question. The way I use epinephrine is I actually dose it based on the patient's diastolic blood pressure. And there's a ton of physiologic rationale, and there's some really smart people like Max Harry Weil saying this is a great way to go. There's no data for it. Should I be doing this? Am I practicing poorly because I'm just interpreting non-high-level evidence?
Well, this is getting back to the crux of your original comments, where there was some mutterings in the audience during SMAC when you came out with this, and the physiological rationale appears sound. The problem is the evidence base for it isn't sound. We don't have an evidence base for it. And is a map of 40 millimeters of mercury correct, or should it be 50, or should it be 30? We don't know. Is a guided map of 40 versus no guided map better? Again, we don't know. So where's your risk-benefit ratio? We don't know. And with all of these questions returning an answer of we don't know, to me, I kind of wonder, well, if I've no idea what I'm doing and if I've no idea what the risk-benefit ratio of this intervention is, should I be doing it? The theory is great, but the theory behind every negative study is great. We don't do things without theory, but we arguably should be doing them with a better evidence base. So that would be my feeling.
Now, this really becomes the key to many of the issues I wrestle with in critical care, which is what about when the standard care has no evidence base either? And it's just been accepted, and most of the people doing the acceptance have never looked at the evidence base. There's no stronger support for 1 milligram every 3 to 5 minutes. In fact, there's a lot of evidence, good evidence, saying that may be deleterious to the patient's post-arrest course. So what about when both the new intervention and the accepted intervention have crap for evidence, Rob?
Yeah, it's a really great point, and it's something that is increasingly being challenged in critical care. I suppose as an individual practitioner, you try and find where the balance of the evidence lies, in which direction the balance of the evidence lies, and that's something for all of us to try and figure out. It's not an easy question. What we need are randomized controlled trials, and also what we need is the noise that this sort of debate that we're having right now will create and hopefully further the argument for the generation of these randomized controlled trials. The more people talk about it, the more noise there is about it, the more likely these are to occur.
Hey folks, Weingart popping in for just a second here outside of the interview to clarify a few things. Rob was mentioning MAP as my goal for using epinephrine. It's actually diastolic blood pressure during compressions using an arterial line. Diastolic blood pressure reflects what the coronaries are receiving, which to my mind is the only reason we are using epi, is to increase coronary perfusion and maybe to a limited extent to increase brain perfusion. The other thing is in the next week or so, I will do a Wii specifically on epinephrine and why I use it the way I do. And there is evidence to support using it based on blood pressure. And I'll talk about that. It's certainly not high level evidence, as I mentioned. And then the other way to think about this, just in slight counter to Rob's skepticism, is if you have equipoise as to whether we should use epi or not, I certainly think you have a lot of room to decide how much epi you are going to give. Because if nothing's okay and 1 milligram every 3 to 5 minutes is okay, I certainly think it's within the realm of acceptable practice to use something in between the two if you have evidence, not great evidence, but evidence to support the rationale behind it until someone does a better trial showing a dose. If Jacob's trial was a positive trial showing epi every 5 minutes had benefit, then that's what we should stick to because that would be a proven system. And then we'd have to compare that to diastolic blood pressure-based dosing. But we don't have that. So that's my rationale. All right, back to Rob. So you have a cardiac arrest in front of you in your unit. What are you doing in terms of medication?
I'm running it pretty much along the standard lines at the moment. I'm not really deviating. Listening to your talk, when I say pretty much along standard lines, all our patients will have an intra-arterial catheter, so we have invasive blood pressure monitoring. I work in an intensive care unit, so all our patients will be intubated, or they will be intubated during the course of their cardiac arrest. Now, I know the evidence around that isn't great, but the intensivists in Northern Ireland are almost all anaesthetists, so I think we're all biased towards intubating our patients. And after that, we'll pretty much run a standard cardiac arrest, unless there are specific underlying pathologies that we'll target.
Sure. So ILCOR and the American Heart Association come out next year, let's say, and they've taken epi out based on their misinterpretation, we think, of the Jacobs trial. What would be your feelings about that?
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I'd really want to see exactly their rationale for that and see how they've formulated that conclusion, or formulated how they've reached that conclusion. It would be very, very interesting. So like we said, the evidence arguably is slightly towards adrenaline, but I think really what they should be doing is focusing on doing a definitive randomized controlled trial, as difficult as that might be. And that's where their focus should be, in my mind. Would I continue to use adrenaline if they take it out of the guidelines? I suppose they'll phrase it in such a way that they'll leave it open for people to use it under certain conditions.
Sure. Okay, so you're giving epi, you're giving the standard ACLS dosing every 3 to 5 minutes or so, and then a paper comes along randomizing that therapy to a new therapy, not just once but twice, two RCTs demonstrating a patient-important outcome favoring adding vasopressin and solumedrol to your epinephrine. But you and Chris Nixon, not believers. Why, Rob?
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's a great question. So at what point do we turn down new compelling evidence? Well, the two studies you're talking about, both Greek studies, so our preliminary study and a subsequent larger randomized controlled trial, both of which are relatively small, 100 patients in the first study, less than 300 patients in the second study, I think it was something like 268 patients, and both run by the same group. So the concept hasn't been confirmed by an outside group. The interventions that they use come as a bundle, so we're not quite sure which of the interventions is the intervention that's made the difference, or whether it's the bundle itself. The group was interesting. Almost 65% of the patients in the subsequent larger randomized control trial had asystole. So it's very, very interesting. There's a lot in the study that I think a lot of us would like to see replicated elsewhere before we undertake this new intervention, given that our best understanding of adrenaline is that it may work, it may not work. Vasopressin, again, may work, may not work. Steroids seem to be a therapy in search of a condition. So the results of the study don't really sit well with the rest of the evidence as we know, the rest of the evidence base. So for those reasons, and one more reason, I suppose, given the Prasad paper last year in Mayo Clinic Proceedings, which was just a game changer for a lot of people, we know that about 40-odd% of critical care will be reversed in the very near future. This study by the Greek group, I think, is really vulnerable to reversal. And interestingly, the authors themselves have made the point that this study needs to be replicated before it comes to standard of care.
Well, you see, now this is really the crux of what we're talking about, because at least for me, my approach to new evidence is Bayesian, right? I look at what my existing beliefs are, and if a study comes out and confirms them and pushes me over the line of adoption, then I might take it. And I look at this VSE study and I say, well, it is a bundle in some ways because they're adding two drugs instead of one, but the VSE is not adding the E. The comparator was epinephrine. So what they're adding is vasopressin, which has a lot of face validity. We know vasopressin has better brain perfusion. We know epi has better heart perfusion. So it made sense to me from the underpinnings. And now they come along and they add vasopressin to the epi. The solumedrol, I don't believe it's really having a big effect at all. There is a lot of preliminary evidence saying it is synergistic with vasopressin. And they add vasopressin to epi for all intents and purposes, and they get better outcome. Not once, but twice. And I agree, I'd love to see it in a independent group validating it. But when you look at the quality of resuscitation research, to have two RCTs, even if they are from the same group, is astoundingly higher than all the other crap we do. So then what we're saying is to set the bar for a new therapy adoption at this point, because we've been bitten so many times, we're going to ask for multiple randomized controlled trials to be published.
Not necessarily. I mean, look, if you take the TTM study, that TTM study dovetails very nicely with the two prior therapeutic hypothermia studies, which demonstrated that 32 to 34 degrees was superior to no temperature control. And now we have 36 degrees gives similar outcomes to 33 degrees. So it doesn't oppose those findings. It dovetails nicely with them. So a lot of people have moved quite early to the TTM guided protocol. And interestingly, I think it was ILCOR came out with a statement on TTM very quickly. To best of my knowledge, they haven't come out with a statement on the VSE study.
Hypothermia is a perfect example. The adoption of that therapy, which has huge implications, was adopted based on two small randomized controlled trials. Was that appropriate?
Yeah, it's a great question. They were two small randomized controlled trials. They were based on a number of sound animal studies, the physiology all stacked up, but it does with everything that reaches a clinical trial. Nothing reaches a clinical trial without having a large underpinning of evidence. So those two studies happened, and at that point in time, it was the best evidence that we had, and there were two, and they were separate. So yes, they at that point in time, we should have gone with it, which everybody did, and it hasn't been reversed since. The new TTM study doesn't reverse the findings of the original two studies. It dovetails with them.
Well, there you go. You'll hear more from Rob tomorrow. You'll hear more from me on epinephrine and why I choose the doses and why I still do it. That's it for now. Scott Weingart, MCRIT, we saying bye-bye, and thanks to Rob McSweeney.